How are you feeling? I mean, seriously, how are you feeling about economic things? Installment number two of our National Economic Survey drops today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Monday, the 14th of March today. Great, as always, to have you with us, everybody. I ask how you're feeling because, A, there's a presidential election on and the economy's right at the top of the list of things voters say they are worried about. But also, B, we've done some asking around ourselves about what worries you economically and why. Dave Shaw is our Washington bureau chief, also the director of the most recent installment of the Marketplace Edison Research Poll. I think I just gave him a promotion, actually. The results, anyway, we are releasing them today. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Guy.
Give me the big picture thing, the change in circumstance from last time.
Okay, so it's been about 6 months since we went out in the field and asked Americans how they were feeling about their personal financial situations. A lot's happened in that 6 months. U.S. economy has added more than a million jobs. The Federal Reserve has raised interest rates for the first time in years and years and years. The economy has strengthened. You would never know it, though, based on the anxiety that people in our poll are feeling. The mean score this time around is 31, the exact same score that it was last time out.
All right, so now you got to drill down and tell me why and wherefore.
What makes sense to do here is to step back a little bit and explain what we ask and how we arrive at this anxiety figure. So our poll done with Edison Research out of New Jersey, it's more than 1,000 Americans that we ask series of questions to. And some of those questions we take and plug into this formula and get the Marketplace Anxiety Index. Score from 0 to 100. It gives you a sense of how stressed out a person feels. We're asking people how they feel about their job, if they're worried they might lose their job, and if they did, how quickly or how easily they could find another job in short order. We're asking them about whether they're worried about making their monthly bills. And we also ask them, are you losing sleep? Are your finances keeping you up at night? And it's 30% of Americans say that their current financial situation is causing them to lose sleep.
Which is, to me, a remarkable number. Let's back it up for a second, though. So the anxiety index remains the same in the face of a rising economy.
Right. And I think it really speaks to this idea, this divide that we've seen in our economy since the recession, where, you know, the wealthy do okay. And if you have a college degree and you have a job, you're doing okay. But if you are in one of those other categories, you are a missed paycheck away from a calamity. And there's a great question that we asked in here about how difficult it would be if you had to pay an unexpected expense of $1,000. Maybe you're in a fender bender. Maybe you have a medical bill. Like, it does not take much to be encountering an extra $1,000. It was striking. A quarter of people said it would be very difficult, and a third of people said it would be somewhat difficult to come up with that $1,000.
You mentioned fender benders and cars, which gets me to the question we asked about gas prices, just because they've been so low, and one would think that that would put some money in some pockets.
Right, and this is interesting because we've done stories on this, and we've been trying to figure out, okay, where is that money going? And if you peer in the numbers a little bit in the poll, you begin to get a sense that the money is being saved in some ways. It's not necessarily going towards new spending, towards new clothes or a new phone or going out to the movies. The folks who say, I am helped a lot by lower gas prices are also the folks who say, I worry a lot about being able to pay my rent, about being able to make my car payment.
Yeah. One of the reasons we did this poll, Dave, was that this obviously is an election year and we want to know what's on people's minds as they go to the poll and what kind of mood the next president is going to inherit. What does this poll tell us about, blame is too strong a word, but where they might assign responsibility for their anxiety?
Well, it's interesting because when you ask about, how do you feel about your elected representatives in Washington, really what you're asking with that is, how do you feel about the president? And Americans, this is not a new finding from our poll. Americans are very split on whether they think the president is doing a good job economically. It is almost an exactly even divide in our poll of folks who approve of the way President Obama is handling the economy and folks who disapprove.
Stories all this week about the new version, the new release of the Marketplace Edison Research Economic Poll. Dave Shaw has been running it for us. He's our bureau chief in Washington. All the data, of course, is on our website, marketplace.org. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
We polled, as Dave said, 1,000 or so people to get today's data. We also, because this is radio, went out and got some tape of people talking about how financially anxious they are or aren't. Here's what they had to say.
No, I don't feel secure because anything could happen. So no matter how much you prepare, there's always that other thing you missed.
You got to be very wealthy to live in this place, to feel secure. So it's tough for me. I'm barely scraping by.
I don't get paid that much. So, yeah.
I would say I feel secure for the moment, but I'm looking for jobs for post-graduation. So I would say I'm in about 3 months, I'll be anxious if I haven't figured out something by then.
I feel that we're like in a crisis right now where I cannot find any jobs. There's just too many people.
I've been saving for retirement since I was 20. So I think that I'm in a good position.
I'm saving. I don't have any debt. And I make enough money to support my lifestyle.
Well, I have a family to support, but I think I do not have enough savings.
I am optimistic in kind of long-term thinking, but not within the next 2 years.
We call that Vox in Radio Land. We've got a list of all those people's names on our website, marketplace.org. Not only does our poll drop today, we're also kicking off a multimedia series with Frontline and the PBS NewsHour that's going to dig into a lot of the themes the poll is telling us are out there. It's called How the Deck is Stacked, and we're looking for your ideas on where to go and what to cover. We've got a quick video of me talking through it on our Facebook page. There's also a link to the whole project at marketplace.org and me, TV, tonight on the NewsHour. Oh yeah, Wall Street today, not even barely worth talking about. So little happened. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so here's a thought. As Apple and the FBI file motions and countermotions in their court fight over encryption of the iPhone from the San Bernardino attacks, the idea of encryption as business strategy is growing. We learned today that Facebook's messaging service, WhatsApp, will soon be fully encrypted. No small thing with an app that's got a billion monthly users. Other brand-name tech companies are strengthening their protections as well. Marketplace's Adrian Hill explains it's all about us.
Apple's very public fight with the FBI has other tech companies scrambling to add to their own encryption practices.
I think you will see, if not an arms race, then at least everybody trying to get something out there.
Matthew Green is a professor at Johns Hopkins Information Security Institute. He says many of the big players are already well into the process. Google, Facebook, and Snapchat have reportedly been beefing up encryption practices for a while. But Green expects more companies will take similar steps and make sure we know about them.
I think there's a lot more interest now with management, seeing what's going on with Apple.
And not just management.
Now it's suddenly become clear to customers how important it is.
Susan Landau is a professor of cybersecurity at Worcester Polytechnic Institute and a former privacy analyst at Google. She says between the Edward Snowden scandal and now this Apple FBI smackdown, consumers are demanding stronger encryption, and it's become a competitive edge for companies. But it's not without costs. Giovanni Vegna is a computer science professor at UC Santa Barbara.
In certain cases, having the data not encrypted is part of your assets because you can do, for example, search on it. You can, you know, extract interesting statistics from it.
You can sell advertising against it. He says expanding encryption also requires developing complex algorithms, adding computing power, and possibly more lawyers. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Just because it's been a while since we've had a good budget fight in Washington doesn't mean Congress isn't trying, you know. A deal reached late last year would let federal spending grow by $30 billion this year. The deal has, predictably perhaps, run into the familiar partisan buzzsaw. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer explains what's going on.
$30 billion here, $30 billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money, not...
It's tiny.
Bob Greenstein is president of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
It's less than 1% of the federal budget.
and yet it has Congress tied up in knots. The $30 billion in new spending for next fiscal year is part of the deal former House Speaker John Boehner hammered out late last year. Greenstein says the $30 billion was to be spent evenly on defense and non-defense programs.
It could be homeland security. It could be education.
The Defense Department would spend most of its extra money on personnel, according to Catherine Blakely, a research fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments.
They're using that money largely to preserve force structure. So that's the number of people in the Army, the number of people in the Marines, to avoid having to make deeper cuts.
But before the $30 billion can be spent, Congress has to agree to include it in next year's budget. A block of conservative Republicans is demanding more spending cuts to pay for the deal. Stan Collender is a budget guru at MSL Group.
The question is, how far are they going to take it? Are they willing to shut down the government if there's no agreement to cut this $30 billion in additional spending?
I cannot believe I'm hearing the S word again. But Collender says a shutdown is not likely in an election year. Congress will just do what it does best, delay a decision until after the election. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The Census Bureau says more and more of us are moving to the coasts, specifically to what are called coastal areas close to the water. Makes sense, because it's nice there, right? But when people do that, they put themselves at risk from severe storms and flooding. The traditional defense has been sand, piling more sand on beaches. But when a big storm hit the East Coast last month, it took down a lot of those dunes along the Delaware coast, leaving residents more vulnerable to the next storm whenever that's going to hit. State officials have once again gone asking for federal funds to fix those dunes, but the price tag keeps going up. From Delaware Public Media, Eli Chen has the story.
A 16-foot dune used to stand at the north end of the boardwalk in Rehoboth Beach. But in October, a nor'easter came along and bit off a few feet. And then a stronger one in January demolished the rest.
Yeah, it's going to be a while before we get this straightened out.
This is William Frazier. A couple days after the storm, he and two other workers were shoveling sand from the boardwalk onto the beach below. Sand covered the entire boardwalk. Fragments of fences lay crumpled along the beach. Vegetation was uprooted and strewn about. Delaware Senior Senator Tom Carper says this is what storm protection looks like.
But the damage isn't to the boardwalk. The damage is not to the businesses. It's not to the homes. It's not to the streets. It's to the beach, and it's to the dunes, which have done their job.
In the weeks since, officials did find damage to bridges, boardwalks, homes, and businesses. On February 18th, Governor Jack Markell wrote a letter to President Obama asking for more than $2.5 million to help. The destruction worries Tony Pratt, the shoreline administrator for Delaware's Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. He fears what will happen if another major storm comes along before communities can regroup.
We're going to be even worse, a worse condition than we had coming into this one, because now we have hardly any dune left.
The Army Corps of Engineers has planned to repair dunes along a couple of the beaches later this year, but projects in some of the really battered areas won't start until after the winter of 2017. Since the early 2000s, more than $100 million in state and federal funds has been spent on building up less than 7 miles of prime beachfront facing the Atlantic Ocean. Pratt says that money is well spent.
We say the tourism that exists within Delaware's coast is extraordinarily valuable. If we can maintain these beaches for several more decades, we're going to see tremendous value out of that.
A 2012 report says that Delaware's coastal economy contributes almost $7 billion per year to the state, nearly as much as agriculture. That's because the beaches draw so many visitors every summer. And more of those tourists are staking out real estate claims. More seasonal homes are being constructed and bought. Recently, the value of the home rental market in the county where the most popular beaches are rose past $1 billion for the first time. And more retirees are choosing to settle down here, too. Linda Parkowski is the state tourism director.
Delaware's a little bit laid back. We have some really unique attractions, and our beaches, each one of them has a different flavor to it. So I think once people visit here, they want to come back and experience that.
But as nice as these beaches are in fair weather, they're increasingly vulnerable to storms and rising seas. The beach towns are well aware of these threats. That's why many of them have changed their building codes. For example, the first floor in a new house has to be at least 18 inches higher than the flood level on FEMA's map. But while measures like these and building higher dunes can help protect communities now, local environmentalists believe there needs to be a better long-term, less costly strategy to defend the beaches from storm damage. Coastal scientist Art Trembanis at University of Delaware says the way officials address the public after extreme weather has become like a broken record.
There's often a quick response to say, hey, we did it, we survived in these places, and this defense work survived. And while that's great and that's testament to the fine engineering work that goes into those different defenses, it's a bit like celebrating after surviving the first round of a title fight with Mike Tyson.
Tony Pratt at the Department of Natural Resources knows that eventually it will become more expensive to maintain the beaches than what they're worth. But for now, this is all they can do.
Until that tipping point, we're going to continue doing what we're doing.
Though it's not certain yet how the state will pay for the dune repairs this year. In Rehoboth Beach, I'm Eli Chen for Marketplace.
Coming up,
you have to provide everything yourself, like water, electricity, security.
With oil prices down where they are, Nigeria comes face to face with the resource curse. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials up 15 points today, 10%, closed at 17,229. The NASDAQ managed to add a point, less than a 10%, finished at 4,750. The S&P 500 slipped 2 points, 0.1%, 2019 there. A sign of how much money some people think can be made in drugs for rare diseases, GW Pharmaceuticals reported positive trial results for a marijuana-based drug for a type of childhood epilepsy, incidence 1 in 16,000, shares up 140%. Zynerba Pharmaceuticals, like GW, works with marijuana chemicals on drugs to treat rare diseases. It jumped even more, Zynerba up 150% today. Cliffs Natural Resources, the nation's biggest iron ore miner, is reopening a Minnesota mine that closed because of a global steel glut. Shares up 15%. Remember, we told you, 10 days, 2 weeks ago about the spike in iron ore prices. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.96%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Behind every successful business is a story. And some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity. A how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
If you miss something on the air, you can hit our podcast. The link is at marketplace.org or try our Facebook page, Marketplace APM. Like us, comment to us, whatever you want. Just let us know you're there.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Today in corporate mergers and acquisitions news, China edition, this item. The Anbang Insurance Group out of Beijing has put an unsolicited offer on the table for Starwood Hotels, which would desperately muck up the $12 billion deal that Marriott thought it had to buy the Starwood chain. It's just the latest in a series of Chinese investments in U.S. companies and real estate, investments that are not universally welcomed. Marketplace's Mark Garrison is on that one out of New York.
Lots of foreigners buy into America. Canadians have invested far more over time than the Chinese, but nobody worries because Canada's a friendly ally next door. Not to mention it has great maple syrup and a nice guy prime minister. China gets outsized attention because it's still unfamiliar, explains Patrick Chovanec of Silvercrest Asset Management.
Initially, a lot of the investors are unknown, and so people have lots of questions about them and maybe concerns. Many of them are state-owned enterprises, which raises the question of to what degree they're commercially motivated and what degree there's a political motivation.
But that's changing as China's credibility and buying power grow. The fact that China and the rest of the world want to invest here means America is seen as safe and growing, which is a compliment. In general, whether you're selling a building, a company, or just a couch on Craigslist, the more bidders, the better price you'll get.
Having a diversity of investors is important to the health of the market.
Sam Chandon is a Wharton School real estate professor. He worries, though, that in major cities, the surge in foreign interest may be causing real estate prices to get out of hand.
We're at a point where Chinese investors and other contributors have pushed the envelope a little bit. That, I think, is acting to lift prices in a way that is raising concerns.
In a hot market for American assets that includes heavy-hitting investors here and abroad, China's just one player among many. But it's new, it's intriguing, and it keeps getting hungrier. So every big deal Chinese investors strike in America will raise eyebrows. I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Nigeria is Africa's biggest economy going away, but right now the global slump in oil prices is doing a number on it. Growth there is the slowest it's been in decades, and in part as a result, the government is trying to diversify away from oil. Manufacturing is one of the old economic reliables that countries often lean on and turn to in these situations. This time, though, it's happening with extremely limited success. Martin Patience of the BBC sent us this report from the northern city of Kano.
Kano was one of Africa's great commercial hubs. Famed for its fabrics, it drew merchants from across the continent. But in recent decades, the winds of global trade blew through the city, leaving devastation in their wake. In the face of competition from China, large-scale smuggling, and high production costs, dozens of factories closed their doors.
This used to be the processing department. Here you have the printing machines.
A former worker shows me around a factory that once hired 5,000 people. He doesn't want to be named. What did this factory make?
We make African prints, trouser materials.
And where are the looms where the material would be weaved? All the looms here, more than 100 of them, taking up a factory floor the size of a football pitch. They're all rusting. There's no roof. The whole factory floor is exposed to the elements. How do you feel, sir, seeing this factory empty?
Very sad. Very sad. When I was working here, my country has future, hope, because I'm a product of this place. I started my working career here. I schooled here. I got married here, having children from this factory. But today, it's a ghost town.
Just a handful of firms survived. One of them is this factory, which produces bedding for hospitals and hotels. But the managing director, Mohamed San Ahmed, says he faces huge challenges.
You have to provide everything yourself, like water, electricity, security, access. I mean, you have to do everything. You have to decide. It's very difficult doing business here.
The Nigerian government is pushing this idea of made in Nigeria. It wants to see more businesses like yours. What needs to be done to actually make that happen?
There should be consistency in policy. We are not afraid of the Chinese. We want them to come. But what we are saying is that there should be a level playing ground. Let them pay the proper duties, then we can compete with them. Moreover, it would give us the advantage that we are producing at the backyard of the people.
Nigeria desperately needs to create jobs. For every worker at this factory, there are dozens unemployed. And with almost 2 million young people entering the job market every year, the pressures are building. On the city streets, it's not hard to find unemployed young men.
My name is Nuhu Ibrahim Kabara. The situation is, when you are done with a higher institution, job is like hard to find because of the situation of the country. If you don't have contact with the government, or if you don't have anybody that can back you up in terms of your business or education, it's really hard.
And that's the challenge for the government. Either fix the economy or face growing unrest. Northern Nigeria has been devastated by the Boko Haram insurgency, in part fueled by soaring unemployment. Kano's past, its traditions are glorious, but its future looks less bright.
The BBC's Martin Patience for us in Kano, Nigeria. Final note on the way out today. You know how when you go to a movie, there's that warning to turn off your cell phone? And you know the way sometimes people ignore it? Raise your hands. You know who you are. Well, they've come up with a solution in China: laser beams. Theater owners are apparently directing colored lasers at people who won't turn off their phones. They call it laser shaming. It does sound harsh, I know, and it's probably dangerous. But, man, those phones are annoying, right? Come on. All right, one more thing about our poll. We want to get a sense of your personal financial situation. So go to marketplace.org, check out our economic anxiety index, and then take our quiz, find out your score relative to everybody else. And hey, listen, fingers crossed for you. All right, got to go. Whole lot of nothing on Wall Street today. The Dow up 15 points, about a 10%. The NASDAQ added a point, less than a 10%. The S&P 500 slipped 2 points, 0.1%. Our daily production team includes Tommy Andres, Bridget Bonder, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. Take the quiz seriously. It'll be good.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.